Hi and welcome to another episode of Book A Better Me. It's a book club where I read a book every month and then at the month end I post a newsletter and post a video regarding the whole summary so that you can know everything from the book but you don't really have to read the book yourself. And this month's book is Atomic Habits by James Clear. And it was actually a very fun read. So a little backstory about this book. So I was out and I was roaming around in Cyber Hub and I was bored. Then I saw a bookstore and I went inside and then I had a lot of free time at that time, like an hour or something. So like I am at a bookstore, a place which I actually like being. So I went there and I took this book and I read about 30-40 pages and I liked the book, so I decided that I would just complete the book and make an episode on this book because I have learned a lot of new things from this book, like different effects and a lot of different stories. So I'll just give you a brief in the beginning. So it's about basically about habits and how small habits can change you, and the author gives a lot of examples of how small changes or how certain habits help famous people and people who are actually successful in their group or in their field. So we'll talk about that. So let's begin. So first of all, why small habits make a difference? So like usually people believe that to achieve success you need to do a major change in your life, like you have to change everything about your life and only then you can be successful. But that is not true. So even if you are getting better at the rate of 1% per day, that is you are 1% better than yourself than you were yesterday, so at the end of the year you would be 37 times better than you were in the start of the year. But if you degrade every day, let's say that you get 1% worse every day, then at the end of the year you are almost at zero. And that's how small habits change. Like they don't help you immediately, the result shows up over a period of time. Like let's say you start eating healthy, you won't see any difference after your first meal. It's not like it's just one day you eat salad and avoid junk food, then next day you are extremely ripped and very strong. That's not true. It's a habit and over time it will show you results. Just like money gets compounded in certain things, like there are compound interest of money, I'm sure you know about it, like we were taught that in the school, like compound interest and simple interest, and we know how compound interest is better than simple interest. Just like that, habits are also compound interest, but instead of money they are of self-improvement. And you will see the effect of the things you do today over a period of time. Sometimes it can be weeks or maybe months, but it shows. So as I said, it shows over time. Then it's very clear that process is very slow in the beginning. So author tells this as that when you plant, like author gives an example of planting a bamboo. So when you plant a bamboo, you don't see any difference in the first 5 years, because during that time the bamboo grass is making its root strong so that it can cover up for the growth it has later on. And then when after its roots are set, then it grows very fast. Like in certain cases it grows up to 1 meter per day, and that is very fast growing. And he gives other examples like cancer. Like cancer doesn't show for the 80% of its life. Cancer, the disease one, not the zodiac one. So it doesn't show itself for the first 80% of its life. Then after that the cancer growth is just rapid, and in certain cases it's even fatal. When you are growing, the growth is not linear, it can be very exponential, but even the growth sometimes reaches a stage which is called plateau of latent growth. So consider a graph, okay, And in the graph, the plateau is parallel to the x-axis. That is, at that time, the growth doesn't really show. Like, for example, this is very similar to the example I just gave, the cancer and bamboo one. But for example, let's take a stone breaker who hits the stone for 100 times, but the stone doesn't break. Like, it's a big boulder than that one on mountains. Okay, so he hits the rock with his hammer and chisel for 100 times, but it doesn't break. But at the 101 hit, the rock breaks. It doesn't mean that the last hit the stone breaker made broke the stone, but actually it was the combined effort of all 101 hits. That the previous 100 hits just stored that energy so that it could break. Just because it didn't show any effect doesn't mean it didn't help. It actually helped. So similarly, that kind of growth is applied to us too. Like, there would be a time when you would be like, I can't see any change in yourself, and you would be stuck at a stage. Like, for example, when I work out, earlier I had a very good growth, but for a very long period of time, I think it was about a month, I was stuck at a phase where I could not do more than 4 pull-ups. Like, I would just get stuck at 4 pull-ups. No matter how hard I tried, like, even if I used less weight or any other technique, I couldn't just get past the 4th. But that doesn't mean that I wasn't growing. It was just that I had reached the plateau and I would grow from this too, but it would take some certain time. That is the plateau of latent potential. So to change our habits, the author introduces us to a very different approach. So the approach is actually about the goal and the system. So the goal is basically that any goal you want to achieve, let's say you are fat and you want to be ripped and reach a certain weight. For example, you are at 90 kg, you want to be at 75 kg and want to be strong enough to do pull-ups and do deadlifts, etc. So that is your goal, and the system are the process that leads you to the goal. So for example, if you are a coach, your goal is to win the championship, and the system is how you would achieve that goal. And it can be the way you recruit your players, the way you conduct your practices, etc. So the goal and systems are different, and the author even talks about why goals are not always beneficial. Like, he says that a goal do give us direction, they are not totally meaningless, but it's better to change the system rather than just looking at the goal. So he talks about the few problems with the goals, and the first problem is that it's very interesting. When I read that first problem, I was like, damn, this is actually true. Like, I hadn't just realized that. So the first problem is that winners and losers have same goals. Like, a lot of people think that just because someone won, they were very ambitious about their goal. Like, recently the UPSC's result got out, and when the ones who scored very high rank, people are like, yeah, they just wanted to become IAS or whatever the post they wanted. They wanted to become that so badly that they just cleared it. But we are just very focused on the winners at this point. But let's look at the loser part. Like, it's not like the one who couldn't clear UPSC weren't trying to win. It's not like the people who go to Olympics and those who don't win medals, it's not like they didn't want to win the medal. Of course they wanted a gold medal, but they just couldn't. So goals of winners and losers are the same, but the difference between is them the system and the approach they have towards it. It's not the goal that made them win, it's actually the system, like the way they studied or the way they practice. That is how they reach the goal. Just thinking about and being ambitious about the goal didn't make them. And Problem number two is a goal is a momentary change. Like let's say you had a goal and you reach it, and then you are like, what next? Like a lot of people don't usually do this. Well, in my opinion, the right approach should be that you reach the goal and then you make a bigger goal and you reach towards that. Okay, so let's say your goal is to clean your room, okay, and you have a messy room and you want to clean your room, then with some efforts you clean your room and your goal is achieved, voila. But if your habits are same, like when you come home you just leave your shoes wherever they are, just throw your t-shirt away and just keep it messy, then it won't take long to your room to become messy again. But when you change the system, then things change. Like when you come, you have a proper place to keep your shoes, you put your dirty clothes in a proper basket. Whenever you get up, you make your own bed, and that's how with changing system your room stays clean. It's you don't have to then clean it again and again, it's just clean always. And here the author says a very interesting quote which I actually like. It's the fix the inputs and outputs will fix themselves. So just like I said that you have a messy room, but you take care of things properly, like you don't mess it, that you have proper place for everything, you just fix all your input and then the room is clean and the output is fixed. So problem number three is goals restrict your happiness. So a lot of people have goal and they tie their happiness to that goal, and they get very sad when that goal is not achieved. For example, most of us Indians are aware of this examination called IITJEE, and there are specific coachings and people go for coaching for 2 to 4 years and even take drop years just to clear the exam, and all their happiness is tied to that result. If they clear it, they are very happy and they go ecstatic. But if they don't, then they get depressed, and some take very harsh steps like self-harm, and that is actually bad. So they tie their happiness to the goal, they don't let themselves be happy before they achieve their goal. So the situation is very clear to them that either you achieve your goal and are successful and happy, or you fail and then you are a disappointment to everybody. So the way to approach this and be happy all the time is that you fall in love with the process, and when you fall in love with the process rather than the product, then you don't have to achieve your goal to be happy. You can always be happy because the process makes you happy. And problem number four is that goals are at odds with long-term process. So a lot of people are like, once they achieve their goal, they revert to their old habits and they don't change it further because their goal is achieved and mentally they are at that stage like, I did this and now I can cut off some slack, and because of that they go back to their old habits. Like there is this pretty fun challenge, and that is that you wake up at 5 a.m. or 6 a.m. whatever time you want to decide, okay? So what you do is that you, let's say you decide that you want to wake up at 6 a.m. every day. So what you do is you tell it on Twitter or internet, any place. Usually people use Twitter because it gives more credibility. So you do that. And then every day, whatever time you wake up, you post a screenshot of the time or your watch showing the time that you wake up and tweet that at that time, so that you show that you are credible. And you do this for a month, and a lot of people do that, but after that time is crossed, they just stop because they stop uploading because the challenge is complete. They don't keep this habit and they just go back to their old habits and wake up late again. So the main two challenges of changing your habit are we try to change the wrong thing, and second, we try to change things the wrong way. And a lot of people try to change their habits based on what they wish they could achieve. Like, this is a very basic approach to this, like quitting smoking. There's a smoker who want to quit smoking, so he decides that he would not smoke. The author provides an alternative for this. He says that the alternative to this is to focus on changing our habits according to whom we want to become. Okay, so this approach is called identity-based habits. And the first one we talked about, the one which was that he wants to quit smoking, or maybe we should use a milder example, for like, let's say we'll call it junk food, and the person wants to quit junk foods. So the approach where he says that I want to stop eating junk food is your outcome based habit, while the one where you want to be the person who doesn't eat junk food is identity based habit. So when we start identifying ourselves with a particular habit, we do it more instinctively. For example, you want to start reading. Okay, so reading a book is an outcome based habit. But the alternative to this is identify yourself as a reader. So once you do, you become one. So there is a two-step process to changing your identity, and the two steps are thinking and focusing on what kind of person you want to be, and proving yourself that you are that kind of person and winning small wins. So for example, if you want to become a writer, like you want to become a person who writes every day, think of yourself as a writer, and then you write a few pages. And when you think yourself as a writer and then you write a few pages, then your mind reinforces the identity that you are a writer in fact. So every time you write, thinking that I am a writer and I write things, your brain connects the identity of you being writer to you more strongly. So how to build habits in four simple steps. A habit is essentially a behavior that has been repeated enough times for it to be automatic. Like for example, think of any habit you have, like let's say checking your phone first thing in the morning. Like it's a bad habit, but it's a good example. So your first instinct is to, whenever you get up, is to check your phone. And it is very automatic. Like even if you are in your half sleeping stage, you still check your phone because it becomes automatic. And you can have other habits, like whenever I get in car, when I'm ready to drive, my first instinct is that whenever I get in car, I first put on my seatbelt, then lock the car, and then I start the car. Like I repeat the same behavior every time. And in the start, I had to consciously put effort, but over time when I started doing this, it's effortless right now. Like I don't even have to think about it, it just happens. And this way I never forget to lock the car and wear a seatbelt. So a habit is formed in four steps, that is cue, craving, reward, and response. So I have a very interesting example for this. Like even when I was reading the book, I was like, damn, I'll just use this example and get ready for a meta reference. So cue is a triggering point. It can be visual or anything. It can be like a person eating a junk food. That can be your cue that gives rise to the craving. And for this example, cue is you getting a notification on your phone about the newsletter or this video. So that is your cue. Cue gives rise to the craving. So craving is that what you want, and in this example, craving is want to know what is in this newsletter and which book I read this month. That is your craving. So when you get craving, you think of reward. Reward is what you'll get in the end, and in our case reward is learning something new. And to get this reward, the actions you take is called response, and response is you reading the newsletter or opening this video or podcast on your app and listening to it. And this whole four steps are how habits are established, that is cue, craving, reward and response. Cue gives the rise to craving. Cravings make you think of reward, and to achieve reward you respond to it, and that's how habits are formed. So there are four laws of behavior change, and we'll talk about all four of them in both the ways, about how to make good habits and how to break bad habits. So the first law is make it obvious. So the essentially how you establish a habit is that you keep repeating a habit over and over, and it becomes part of your subconscious. And it's not always a good thing, because of that you can do weird things just because of your force of habit. Like one of the good example is that if you have any younger sibling, or you are the younger sibling, and there are times, like if you have significant age difference, what happens is that your parents accidentally call you with their name or call them by your name, because it's actually a force of habit and it just happens enough times, and it's in their subconscious. Like they are trying to call you, but instead they took the name of your elder sibling. So that is very common. So to tackle this, the author tells us about a very common technique used by Japanese train management system. So the habit they use is that they have this thing called point and shout system. So the Japanese trains are very well known for their punctuality and the way they operate. What happens is that if they have to, like before the train leaves, they have to check each and every door so that no one is stuck in between and the train is safe to go. So what they do is they point at the door and they shout out that this is clear to go, this is safe, this is safe, this is safe. They point out to the time, and then they point out to the driver that the train is ready to go. And that's how this works. And like the more simpler analogy that we all can understand in basic day-to-day life is that when you are leaving your house, okay, so you don't want to forget your keys, wallets or anything. So what you do is before you put them in your pocket, you take your phone, and then you say phone, and then you keep it in a pocket. Then you take your wallet and put it in your back pocket or whichever pocket you put it in. And that's how you name the thing, and then you keep it so that you can be sure then that you have actually kept it. So these things actually helps you in making things easier and easier to remember. So this thing can be applied to your habit making. So what you do is that you declare what you will do, when and where. So let's say you want to start the habit of working out. So instead of just thinking that you will work out, what you do is you speak to yourself, like out loud, just like I am doing to you. You speak to yourself in this tone, and you like practically shout it if no one is around you. So you do that, not just speak to yourself in your mind, like don't be someone who just talks to themselves inside their mind, because you tend to forget those things. So let's say you want to work out. So what you do is you say out loud that I will work out tomorrow at 7 p.m. in gym. So because you said that, your brain takes that thing more seriously, and then there are more chances of you doing that thing. So this is how you can start habit, like whatever habits you want to read. For example, you want to start reading book. You say that I will read a book at 10 p.m. in my bedroom before sleeping. So this is how you tell your brain that you are actually serious about making this happen. So author talks about a very interesting effect here, and the effect is called Diderot effect. I hope I am pronouncing it right. So Diderot effect is basically, let's say you went to shopping, okay, and you went there to buy one thing, but when you are there you see one another thing and you find that interesting and then you buy that too. And this effect was after a person who was extremely poor, but when he got money he bought one good things for himself. Like he got himself a robe, I think, I don't remember exactly, but he got himself a piece of clothing and he thought that his piece of clothing didn't match all his other possession, so he used all the money to buy all the other things to accommodate for his piece of clothing. This can be for example related to your dressing sense for current times too. Like you buy yourself a good dress, and to like this is especially true for girls, so you buy yourself a good dress and to go with that dress you buy yourself a matching shoes, earrings or something so that they can just match. And just because I said girls doesn't mean boys do it, but I think girls sometimes do it more often, because I personally don't so I don't think other people do too. Like I wear the same exact clothing. I have a few clothes which I usually just repeat, and they go out with each other very well. Men clothing does go with few options with very well, like just wear jeans and you have a ton of t-shirt you can wear, or shorts. It's just fun. So your goal is that in the first law is that you make your cue very obvious. So with addition to like saying it out loud, even if you like say it out loud that you want to read a book, and you don't read a book at that time, but you can do is that you take your book and you put it on your pillow, okay, whenever you are leaving or whenever time you get before sleeping, so that when you return to your bed you see that the book is lying there, and then you read that book because you made a commitment earlier. So that is how you can make good habits, that you can make the cues very obvious and you work and you make the cues very obvious and you make your commitment strong. And another way to get this with a cue is that you stack your habits, so that like let's say you before sleeping you drink milk, okay, so you finish your dinner, you drink milk and then you sleep. So instead of making a totally new habit that you will do this, what you do is you tell yourself that after drinking milk you will read books, so that you just stick another new habit, a good habit, with your old habit, and that's how it works. So with time this habit of reading would add to your habit of drinking milk. So it's actually a very nice way. And to avoid doing bad things is that you make your cue invisible. So let's say you have a habit of checking your phone first thing in the morning and you want to avoid doing that, so what you do is that you put your phone in another room before sleeping, so that you can't check your phone first thing in the morning and you have to actually get out of the bed to check it. If you want to eat more fruits instead of bad things, like bad, not exactly bad, but junk food, so instead of putting your fruits in fridge, you have a fruit basket and you put it on your kitchen table so that you can see them, and then you would tend to eat them more than you would eat at fridge. So second law is make it attractive. So a lot of people don't follow good habits is that because it doesn't feel attractive to them, and I agree, that good habits are actually hard to maintain, and they don't always feel very attractive in the beginning. Like a workout in the starting feels very tiring. Actually, you actually ask that question to yourself, that why are you doing this? So that happens. So it doesn't feel very attractive. You need to make your habits irresistible so that you keep on doing them. So like, I assume that you are aware of the thing dopamine, the hormone dopamine. Like, it's actually a very popular word these days, and people who don't even know how it actually works pretend that they know everything about this. And I recently learned new things about this in the book too. Dopamine is not just a rewarding hormone, it is a habit, it is a neurochemical that influences our habit. And it's not just about the pleasure, but it also plays roles in motivation, punishment, etc. And every time you anticipate a reward, your dopamine gets a spike. So I used to think that, and I think a lot of people do that, you will get dopamine rush only when you finish something and you get the reward. But that is not true. Like, that is true for the first time, before you didn't know what the reward was. But once you know what is the reward of doing specific thing, your dopamine spikes up before you actually win the reward. And that was very interesting to me. So this is how dopamine helps us in making habits, because it gives us a reward for doing something. So there is this guy called Ronan Bynd who wanted to watch more Netflix, but he wanted to get healthy too. So his habit and good thing he wanted to do was to become healthy. But he wanted something which he enjoyed too, and that thing was watching Netflix. So he made himself a bike that would only play the Netflix only when he's cycling at a very certain speed. If he slows down, the Netflix on the screen would pause automatically. We imitate habits of three groups in particular. Like, we have, like, scientists have found out that there are three groups in our lives whom habits we imitate. The first one is the close ones, the people around you, your family, your friends. And this can be the identity. Like, if it in your family, it's very common to eat vegetarian food and non-veg is avoided, you would tend to go towards the vegetarian and you won't actually eat non-veg. And it is very common if you look around. And the second is the many. So as human beings, we are a social animal and we want to associate to the group, and we would act like the group we are in just to be similar to them and feel the feeling of belongingness. And these things include examples like your state culture. Like, in your state, if you all celebrate something, then that becomes a habit to you. And even if you get out of that place, you would have that habit of doing that. If there are things you do certain way, like, if, like, for example, in South India, some people tend to wear more lungis, because in that place it's very common and a lot of people do that, so it becomes a habit to them. But in northern state, it's not that common. So these kind of things influences your habits. And the third one is the powerful. The powerful just not include the strong ones, but they include the rich people, the successful people. People want to imitate the successful people and be like them. Like, people, like, for example, take Elon Musk. A lot of people are crazy about Elon Musk and they try to imitate his habits. People did that. Like, there was this woman. There was this woman called Elizabeth Holmes. You can just search about her. She's not related to Sherlock Holmes, by the way. So her name was Elizabeth Holmes, and she ran this company called Theranos. It was a very famous company at that time, and the net worth of that company reached $15 billion, but it was actually a fraud. So it was a very interesting book too. I have read that book too, so maybe I'll read that again. So that woman actually imitated a lot of Steve Jobs. Like, she would wear only black turtlenecks because Steve Jobs did too. So people tend to imitate powerful people and imitate their habit because they want to be like them, because they think that with that habits, the ones they follow, they would get more successful and powerful too. So people imitate their habits. So the second of this is fixing your bad habits. So all of the habits have an underlying craving. So when you want to eat a junk food, you specifically don't want to eat junk food. Your underlying craving is that you want to eat food. To make your bad habits go away, you make them so unattractive and repulsive that you don't try to do it again. Like, you see the bad outcomes of those habits and everything, and then altogether you avoid that. So moving on towards the third law, and the third law is make it easy. We'll talk about the example the author gave, and it was very good example. Okay, so once Professor Jerry Ulsman of University of Florida did an experiment, and he divided his class in two groups, and the first group would be graded on the quantity of the photos they took. So taking 100 photos in that session meant getting A grade, and taking less, like if for example you take 80, then it meant a B grade, for just like that. And the second group would get their grading based on the quality of the photo. So they would have to just take one photo, but it should be almost perfect photo to get an A grade. So he divided his class in that way. And at the end of year, the results were very interesting. The first group had in general much better photos than group 2, because they used to repeat their clicking. They used to click so many photos that they would see things, and then they would try to improve their mistakes. And because of that, their photos eventually and gradually became better than the ones who had to just take one photo, because for them they were just waiting for that perfect moment instead of practicing. But the first group was actually practicing, and they would click so many photos. They would try different style, they would experiment different ways, different settings, and they learned how to get better photos. But the first one didn't try that. They were just waiting and sitting there to get that one perfect image, and that never happened. So with each and more photos they took, they learned more and they got better. And neurologists refer to this as long-term potentiation. That is, with each repetition, cell-to-cell stimulus, like brain-to-brain cell signaling, improves and neural connection tighten, that the neural connection become more strong. And there's a very very fun quote, or very fun law. It's called Hebb's law, and it says that it seemed funny to me. So Hebb's law states that neurons that fire together wire together, and that's how things are. You take more photos, you repeat an action a lot of time, and it gets more automatic, and you gradually improve in it. So all of the habits are same this way. So to do this, what you do is you repeat your habit, that whatever you want to do. Like, for example, you want to do push-ups, you do push-ups and you keep on doing that, and with time they get better. So the author even talks about very interesting things he faces, is that a lot of people ask that how long does it take a habit to form, and a lot of smarties out there like me know that it's 21 days, because a lot of people say that it Scientists say that it 21 days and it's very popular. If you have specifically watched this series called Quota Factory, they say that it takes 21 days to form a habit. But Arthur says that instead of asking this question, you should ask how many times does it take to form a new habit, because it's more of how many times you repeat it. Like if you are learning guitar and if you are practicing more time to practice a specific chord, then you would reach to that point of learning earlier than someone who practices it less frequently. So you repeat that. And there is this law called law of least effort. We humans are genetically designed to, when given option of two similar things, we decide that we would go and do the thing which take less effort, and that is how we are genetically wired. Because earlier when we were cavemen, energy was very important thing, like the food wasn't as readily available to us as it is now, so we had to save energy, and that is what we did. We would do the least effort way to get things done. So if you want to reduce watching television, what you do is that you make the thing harder for yourself to do. And to make good habits, you make it easier to do. Like for example, let's talk about the television example first. So let's say you have a television and you want to stop watching so much TV. So what you do is, after every time you finish watching the TV, you unplug the switch. And the author even goes as far as saying that if that doesn't help, what you should do is you should take the TV out. And even if that doesn't make it work, what you should do is you should have a closet where after every use you put your TV in that closet. Because the thing is, when you do this, if you want to watch TV again, you would have to do the effort of going and taking that TV out of the closet, putting it back again, then turning it on, and that is too much effort, and your brain would try to avoid that. So you would do another thing instead of doing that. And to apply good habits, you make it easier for yourself. For example, if you want to drink water, okay, so instead of remembering yourself and remembering it and then going back to the kitchen again and again to drink water, what you can instead have is you keep a water bottle with yourself and you drink water every time, and because it's just right in front, like for me it's this cup, I have water in it, and it's very easy because you don't have to get up and go to the kitchen every time you drink water. And just because it's right in front of your eyes, like the first law, make it obvious. The water is right in front of you, and it is a very good cue. And just because you see water, you would feel like drinking it, and then you would drink more water. If you want to start a new habit which you think would take more effort, what you do is you do 2-minute rule. So in the beginning, whatever habit you are doing shouldn't take more than 2 minutes to do. Like let's say example, you want to start reading book, you decide that you want to read the book for more than 2 minutes, so you read for 2 minutes and then over, and you keep doing that. And at a very specific time, it feels to your brain that your brain would not want you to stop at 2 minutes. It would be like, let's do it for more time, and gradually you start doing that more, and that's how good habits are formed. So the fourth law is make it satisfying. So as I said earlier, that good habits don't reward at the instantly, they take a lot of time to give you rewards, and what is rewarded is repeated, and what is punished is avoided. So the first three laws of behavior change increases the odds that the thing or the behavior will happen this time, but the fourth law increases the odds that a behavior will be repeated next time. So there are two types of environment: immediate return environment and delayed return environment. So immediately returned environment is like you do something and you instantly get the reward. For example, you want to eat junk food, you eat that and you instantly get the reward because the food tastes good and it feels nice to you. And delayed return rewards are you working for a whole month and getting salary at the end of the month. So that is immediate return environment and delayed return environment. And as humans, we have always evolved from as that we want and prefer immediate return more than delayed return. So because at that time we weren't sure when we would die, like we still aren't, but the life expectancy has increased. So we are moving towards a more delayed return environment. Like this started all with farming because we had to plant crops and we would wait for the crops to be harvested, and that is how delayed return start. Delayed return also include examples like you're planning your retirement, or you waiting for some time to do this, you working out in gym so that you can get fit in future and you live a healthy long life. The more immediate the pleasure, you would tend to repeat that more. And the golden rule to see if your habit is bad or not is that if the reward is immediate and it feels good, think more properly if this habit is good or bad. Because generally what happens is that bad habits reward in the beginning and cost later, but good habits cost now but give returns later. Like for example, if you are a smoker, if you smoke you feel good and that is your instant reward, but the cost of that is cancer in future. So but workout on the other hand is it costs now that you are working out, you are getting the cost, you are paying the cost now, but the returns are in later when you get the gains, you have that ripped body, you have that strength. So these are the two examples. To do this, you make a habit tracker. Like you take a calendar. Like a calendar is the most easy example of this. Like for example, you want to start reading book. What you do is you get yourself a calendar, and whenever you read, you cross that day and you do this. So you have a visible tracker in front of you and you see your streak, and because of that you would not want to break your streak, and that would actually motivate you more to do it. So you have to just make sure that you get motivated enough to do this. And it's very satisfying when you see a good streak. Like a lot of people make Snapchat streaks, so because they make so many streaks, they don't break it and they get very emotional when they accidentally break it. So this is how it works. You make streaks for your good habits. So for reading, you make a streak. For working out, you make a streak. It can be visual things. Like author gives an example of an investment banker. What he used to do was before, like he was a stock broker. Okay, so what he used to do was he had two jars, and in one jar there were 120 paper clips and other jar was empty, and he would come in the morning every day and put the two jars on his table, and after making one call he would move one paper clip from the pin jar to the empty jar. And that's what he would do after making every call, and that's how he reached his daily goal of 120. And the pins actually helped him in keeping track of the calls, and it was a visual tracker and it motivated him to do more. So that is how it works. And the thing is that sometimes it happens is that you relapse. So that, like, let's say you are working out, but because of something you are just not able to work out. Like let's say you got stuck at work and because of that you could not work out, so you relapsed one day. But make sure you don't relapse twice, because relapsing twice is starting a new habit. And like the author said, lost days hurt more than successful days help. So it doesn't matter if, like, the day you are not feeling strong and you don't want to work out, you just work out for 5 minutes or 10 minutes, because it just makes the identity stronger and you would avoid to lose that in future. And to avoid doing bad habits is that you make it very unsatisfying. So like you make a habit contract. Habit contract is a something where you decide that whenever you do a bad thing, you would do something that would actually hurt you. So it can be anything, like whenever you skip a workout day, you give your friends 100 rupees or 200 rupees, amount you agree on, or any other thing. You don't use your phone for a day, this kind of thing, just to punish yourself, so you would avoid doing that. So this is actually a very helpful way of removing bad habits. You make it very unsatisfying. And to get the whole cheat sheet of doing this, you can go and visit to the link atomichabits.com/cheat sheet, and it would be in the description, and you can check it out. And there is this whole cheat sheet to maintain your habit and all the four laws there. So now, since we have discussed the four laws, we would move to the advanced tactics, like things that would separate you from, that would make you good to better. So a lot of people say that genes are everything, they can't perform very good in this because of their genes, but that is not always true. Genes don't determine your destiny. They determine your areas of opportunity, sure, but they don't determine your destiny. So the most proven scientific analysis of personality traits, also known as the Big Five, which bring them into five spectrums of behavior, are: first, openness to experience, from curious and inventive on one to cautious and consistent to on other. The conscientiousness, organized and efficient to easygoing and spontaneous. 3, extroversion, outgoing and energetic to solitary and reserved, also known as extroverts and introverts. 4, agreeableness, friendly and compassionate to challenging and detached. 5, neurocriticism, anxious and sensitive to confident, calm and stable. So I'll read this page, which I actually liked. Okay, this talks more about this thing only, these five habits, and I'll just read them out to you. Where did it go? Yes, huh. So all the five characteristics have biological underpinning. Extroversion, for instance, can be tracked from birth. If scientists play a loud noise in the nursing ward, some babies turn towards it while others turn away. When researchers tracked these children through life, they found that the babies who turned towards the noise were more likely to grow up to be extroverts, and those who turned away were more likely to become introverts. And he gives other examples, like people who are high in agreeableness are kind, considerate and warm. They also tend to have higher natural oxytocin level, a hormone that plays an important role in social bonding, increases feelings of trust and can act as natural antidepressant. You can easily imagine how someone with more oxytocin might be inclined to build habits like writing thank you notes or organizing social events. As a third example, consider neurocriticism, which is a personality trait all people possess to various degrees. People who are high neurocriticism tend to be anxious and worry more than others. This trait has been linked to the hypersensitivity of amygdala, the portion of the brain responsible for noticing threats. In other words, people who are more sensitive to negative cues in their environment are more likely to score higher neurocriticism. Our habits are not solely determined by our personalities, but there is no doubt our genes nudge us in a certain direction. Our deeply rooted preferences make certain behaviors easier for some people than for others. You don't have to apologize for these differences or feel guilty about them, but you do have to work with them. A person who scores lower on conscientiousness, for example, will be less likely to be orderly in nature and may need to rely more heavily on environment design to stick with the good habits. So your genes don't determine everything, but it just gives you a direction to work on. So how to find that where your genes are helpful? And one approach to this is trial and error, but it's a very long and exhausting process. Sweet alternative, which is similar, but it's more quicker. So the alternative to this is experiment and experiment exploit method. So you experiment for a very specific initial period and you try something, you experiment with it. If you find like it and it is easier for you, then you go and exploit this thing and you keep going in that field. But if the experiment doesn't feel that good to you, you change your experiment and you move towards a new thing, you experiment with that and you keep repeating this method until you find something you are actually good at. So while you are doing this, you can ask yourself these questions to narrow down your habits that would make things easier for you. So the first one is like, what feels like fun to me but is work to others? The work that hurts you less than it hurts others is the work you were made to do. Another question is, what makes you lose track of time? So the blend of happiness and peak performance, which people refer to being in the zone, like when you get in the zone and you are totally concentrated and you are oblivious to the outside world, is a thing where you should go towards. What comes naturally to me? So if you feel that you do something and it is very natural to you, then you are probably headed in the right direction. And there is a very interesting rule called Goldilocks rule. So it states that motivation is there for manageable difficulty, not too easy or too hard, else you lose motivation. You have to fall in love with the boredom. So what is that? It basically says that whenever you are trying something new, it doesn't have to be very easy, because if it's very easy, you will get bored easily and you would not do that. And it should not be very hard to you, because if it is very hard, then you would lose the motivation to do that. So the difficulty should be appropriate to you, that it is not too hard or too easy, and it just at the right point that it motivates to you go further. And this is what, like, falling in love with the boredom separates the successful people from ordinary people. They show up and they put in efforts even when they are bored. Like, if they don't want to do it, they still do it. That is why successful people are different from normal people. And consistency is very important to them. So they keep repeating that thing even when they're bored. They don't care about their boredom, but consistency is very important to them, so they keep doing it. And there is a bad side to the habit, is that when you become very habitual of something, you get insensitive towards new information and you don't notice your mistakes. Like, if you think that you are good enough at something, and then you would not care for your mistakes, because you won't really put conscious effort to make things better. So the thing is that habits are necessary, but they are not sufficient for mastery. So for mastery, you need habit and deliberate practices, because habit plus deliberate practices equals to mastery. You keep a journal with you, you note down things and how they work, and you look at that and then you reflect at yourself and get better at things. And that's how it should be. And you keep a record, you see that, you see the where there were differences made, and you keep doing that and you put in conscious effort. That's how you grow towards the mastery. And like, concluding the book, it's the thousands of tiny habits that improve you, not just one tiny habit. So small habits don't add together, they compound. So the whole change in your life is not because of one small habit. It is because there are very small habits combined together, and together they change the big picture. For example, a single pixel doesn't do much thing, but when combined with other pixel, it actually shows you movies and photographs. And that's how small habits help you too. And before ending this episode, I'll like to tell you a few quotes which I actually liked. And these quotes are, first, habits can help you have and become a lot great things, but habit is not about having something, they are about becoming something. Second, be the designer of your world and not merely the consumer of it. Third, whatever habits are normal in your culture are among the most attractive behavior you will ever find. Fourth, when changing your habits means challenging the tribe, change is unattractive. When changing the habit means fitting in with the tribe, change is very attractive. 5. Desire is the difference between where you are now and where you want to be in future. 6. Distractions are good thing because you need distraction to practice meditation. 7. The first mistake is never the one that ruins you. It is the spiral of the mistakes that follows. 8. Missing once is an accident. Missing twice is the start of new habit. 9. When you can't win by being better, win by being different. 10. Work hard on things that come easy. 11. Boredom is perhaps the greatest villain on the quest of self-improvement. 12. A lack of self-awareness is poison. Reflection and review is the antidote. 13. Success is not a goal to reach or a finish line to cross. It is a system to improve, an endless process to refine. So with that, I'll just end this episode, and you can sign up for the book club at bookabetterme.substack.com. The link is given in the description. If you like the video, you can just like this video and subscribe to the channel. And next month, I'll come back with another book. And if you liked it and you would like, I would really appreciate it if you would share it with your friends and let them know that you learned a few things, and also teach them a few new things. So with that, I'll end today's episode. Bye.